Hi everyone, my name's James, I'm an addict. First of all, I've got to, as reluctant as I am, I've got to tell you how I feel. And I've been around quite a while, but I still have to work at telling you how I am. And all my defences are up because I'm scared. I'm out of my comfort zone. I'm always nervous doing a chair. But I can handle that, you know, around my comfort zone, being around where I live, and when all my pals are there and everything. And there's not a, I think Roz is the only person I know here, you know, and so my defences are up, and I have to really work at that, because when my defences are up, I want to be clever, and I want to be fronty, and so I've got to work at that. And so I'm going to tell you a bit about how it is for me. I'll tell you a bit about my using and my life before recovery. And your mom card, if I got one. Funnily enough, one of my big fears was, because I didn't know anything about this type of meeting, the fear was even more, because it's the unknown, and funnily enough, and when Roz told me it was to share for 40 minutes, that just sort of paralyzed me. I'd kind of forgotten about this meeting, that I had this commitment, and my phone reminded me just the other day, and then I was filled with fear, and I thought, fuck, she said 40 minutes. and I've shared that with a few of my owls and that, and in the fellowship. And funnily enough, one of them phoned me today, and he said, "How are you, James?" He's going up to the convention, but he phoned me and said, "Hey, you're all right. I'm thinking of you tonight." So I said, "Yeah, it's just on me, fucking 40 minutes, sharing in a place I don't know." And this is what I love about us. This is recovery, and people tell us things that we don't always want to hear, And he said, "Well, you didn't have any fucking problem sharing 40 minutes at an hour's newcomer meeting the other week, so you should be all right." So I've got to be careful. But I feel I'm almost dumbstruck now. But anyway, using, how it was for me, my story is, my family is completely non-alcoholic. They're not born again Christians or anything like that, or they just didn't drink. Drink wasn't around in my family. And I was, the first time I experienced having to drink, I was a very shy, introverted kid. And I don't know, I've been around quite a while, and in early days of recovery, like us all, I've studied and pondered, is it an illness? Is it, is it learned behavior? Was I born with it? And where I am right now, I don't give a fuck whether I was born with it or not. The way it is for me is, I realized that something was dysfunctional in me, and I was thrown into this world like all of us with no choice, and we all build up ways of dealing with our existence, lots of them are healthy and a lot of them serve us for a long while. That seems to be what happens to normal healthy people, but for people like me and us here, one of the many symptoms it manifested in me, finding it in putting substances in my body to change the way I felt. So I was a very shy kid, wanted to be out there, but was just totally, just shy. And I was also the youngest in my little gang. I was born and bred in King's Cross, Somers Town in North London. And I was a couple of years younger than my peers. And anyway, I had a drink when I was 12. And it totally transformed me from that moment on. I was sick afterwards, and they got me at it, not making me drink. I was a willing participant. And it just changed the way I felt when I, retrospectively, as I've reflected over in my recovery, as we do, looking at, where we come from and our experiences, and there, clearly, that's where I fell in love with that. That was the answer for me. Yeah, even though I was ill, very ill, sick, and felt terrible, I could not wait. And then I'd be asking the guys and the girls at the time, you know, to give me more. And there I was dancing, able to interact with the girls, kissing and all that kind of stuff. And so it was just progressive there and from there on. And every substance that I found from there on in, I fell madly in love with. Although I did continue to drink. but around in my time, I'm going back a few years, obviously, and, you know, I was introduced to purple arts and things like that. And I was just, you know, just absolutely thought, you know, this is fantastic, you know. And loved that. And then, you know, dope and all that kind of stuff. And then cocaine. And then cocaine and heroin became my drugs of choice. And but during the course of my early teen years, I was actually... I managed to do an apprenticeship, God knows how. It's one of the only things I completed in my early life. I used to make clothes, and I went on to design clothes and all that through the 60s, and you know, using all through that. And I actually, these older people that I got sort of were my peers. They said, "Well, you know, if you take these drugs, you'll be able to stay out all night and still go to work in the morning." And so I did, you know, foaming at the corner of the mouth and all that. But I managed to do this apprenticeship in Savile Row, and I just used. So I was basically using on a daily basis from, you know, from the age of 15, really. And it was progressive. And as I say, each drug that I used, I loved. And the just going back to whether it's a disease or not, I don't know. All I know is before I had that drink, I was born. There was three of my family, families of my family. We all lived in a tenement, and all of my cousins there were women. So I was surrounded by women, and before ever having a drink, I used to find that I used to isolate a lot. I used to find ways of being able to get away on my own, which is very difficult to do, as you can well imagine, in a, you know, shit house in King's Cross, you know, piss hole type building. That's what happened, but I'm sort of making sense of it in my recovery, that I wanted to get away from all of this. I couldn't take, you know, the attention and the lack of privacy. And that came with me into my using, ultimately. Although I would appear to be, you know, without vanity, I mean, people have told me this, you know, even in my life today, that I would appear to be, I would be perceived as being a gregarious person. But that's so, I mean, I'm able to do it, but nobody knows the torment and the struggle that goes on inside, particularly back through my early life. It still happens today. But, you know, but in actual fact, I'm a loner. I'm an absolute loner. And much of my using, although for quite a period of time, I was what I suppose I would call a privileged user. I got involved in drugs after my business went up in the air, and just carried on. And but even though I had the things, you know, the car and the social circle and the clubs and all that, I actually couldn't wait to fucking get away. And I'd be perfectly happy sitting in a nice flat with my gear and the fucking phone off the hook and just be there. I mean, that's come with me, actually. I'll talk about that a bit later. That's with me in my recovery. It doesn't matter how long we've been around on one hand, you know, it is about today, but you know, I'm telling my story. So although I've been around for 19 years, I still, no matter how much I know, I still have great difficulty. I find myself putting myself into an autistic state, and I don't wish to undermine, you know, the terrible illness of autism, you know, in its at the far end of the spectrum. But what actually happens to me is I become autistic. I become in a bubble when I isolate, and I can't. I want to get out, but I can't get out. I cannot engage with people. And but a bit more about that later. But so that was my using. It culminated in me going to prison. That had nothing to do with me quitting. I used all the way through. I don't mean that in a leery way. I used all the way through prison and done a long time in prison. And came out of that, carried on, and you know, that's the way it was. But I'd never really seen anybody get clean. I didn't know anything about 12-step programs or anything. I seem to recall a few people going, you know, coming round to my little crew of people. Oh, well, give us a bit of gear, you know, I'm going into fucking rehab tomorrow. That should be a laugh sort of thing. And I just remember that happening, and I remember people coming out and coming straight round to, you know, where I used to hang out, to score, coming out of treatment, you know. And, oh, it was a laugh in there, fuck that, blah, 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 blah. So I didn't really know anything about it. But, however, the way it occurred for me was somebody who was around in my using circle disappeared off the scene, and then I run into her, you know, some time later, and she... She called out to me and said, "Oh, hello, James." She was a lovely, lovely woman. She came from a very sort of wealthy family, and it was very close—not in a sexual way. She was just one of our little crew, and she said, "Oh, how you doing?" And this is where it sort of began for me. She said, "How are you?" And I said, "I'm great, fine, you know, as we do. I'm, yeah, sweet." And she said, actually, she looked great to me. She, you know, there was something I saw in her. And she said, "Oh, James, you look like shit." And it really jarred me. And I thought I looked great, you know, because I had the outside appearance things of what I thought were great. And I had a few bob and all that kind of stuff. And anyway, she passed it on to me. She said, "Listen, you won't see me around. You know, I don't use anymore." And I thought, that's weird. She said, "But if ever you need any help, I'm going to give you a number that you can call and you can maybe get some help." And that was that. And then a couple of years went by, and miraculously, I'm glad there's nobody I really know here, because I'll tell this story, but it's the way it is for me, and it's relevant, and it's good for me to hear it. I wasn't on the floor. I wasn't on the floor financially. I had a few bob, and I had a few things going for me, and I used and I had my drugs of choice, and I remember it clearly, and I fixed myself up, and I remember sort of sitting there, and it didn't just happen on this day, you know, when we say it wasn't working anymore. I was using as much as I needed to use. But this particular day, it didn't work anymore, and I was just so filled with absolute despair. And I say this, and it was the first time since I was a boy, I was alone, and tears run down my cheeks. And there I was with my drugs of choice. I had money in my pocket. I had a car outside. And I sat there and I wept. I was married, incidentally, which I'll come to in a moment, a straight, lovely woman who, I mean, she obviously had some the other side of the illness to be hiked up with somebody like me. But and I made this phone call, and miraculously I had this phone number in my wallet, and I phoned up and I spoke to this guy, and he said, I've never been spoken to it like it before, you know. I was a bit of a wise guy from around North London, and, you know, thought I knew it all. And this guy said, "Well, sounds like you're in trouble. Why don't you get down here and have an assessment on Monday or whatever it was?" And I said, "Oh, I can't just..." I think it was maybe a Thursday, and I had the call on it, and he said, "Come down on Monday." And I said, "Oh, we're back." I said, "I can't just... stop my business just to run down there on to Western Supermare just like that." And I always remember it. I mean, it went over my head at the time. He said, "Do you ever fucking leave your business to go out and fucking score?" I'm not good at accents, but he came from somewhere like that. And went over my head, and I thought, saucy bastard, you know. But miraculously, I went down and I had an assessment, and that was the beginning of my recovery. And then I was completely and utterly blown away by that, you know, in the worst sense. I just did not know what I was going in for. And I remember clearly sitting there, and obviously, as you probably all know, some have been in treatment, but I had no idea of this, that the senior counsellor there was obviously in recovery. And he said, what do you want? What do you want from this? And I said, well, all I want is for you to get me off this shit smack, because it's fucked my life up. He sat there with a wry smile, and he said, and the other stuff? I said, well, that's fine. I've been doing that for years. That hasn't fucked me up. It's just this shit. Just get me. He went, okay, James, you know. And the terrible thing was, he said, we'll give you a call. And I said, well, I want it. Can't I come in now? And he went, no, it doesn't work like that. He said, you'll just have to wait. Anyway, that's what happened. And I got the call. And I was using at the time, obviously. And I got the call to come in on the Monday. And I went, and then I walked into this place, and there was this 20 people and in Western Supermare, and I was just absolutely... I used all the way down on the train, because in there, they was going to detox me in there, so it wasn't like you had to be clean to get in there. So obviously I had a binge on the way down on the train from Paddington. And but I have to say this, because I want to talk about what I want to get to about faith, spirituality and things like that, and for me that has no religious connotations for me, and about higher powers and how things work for us, and sometimes without us knowing. And I'd been to prison, I'd been around, so the first move I'm going to do going down to treatment is to put some gear inside myself, and I had my gear and my works to get on the train with. I was going first class, and I secreted in my body some Ficeptone pills, you know, and a few quid in a charger, and you know, contingency plans, as we have, and a miraculous thing happened, and God knows it had nothing. You know what I'm saying is, this had nothing to do with James. I hit myself up on the train. I was fine. I got off the train, went straight into a pub, had a couple of large brandies, and I had to be in this place at 11 a.m. And I don't know where it came from. I walked into the toilet of the pub, and I took the gear, you know, out of myself, and threw it all down the toilet before I walked into the treatment centre. And having said that, I did keep 10 Ficeptone pills, because I was afraid that they would not give me enough, you know, detox. And anyway, I went into the treatment centre, and there I was just to be absolutely... they kind of wiped the floor with me, really. And I just never experienced anything like that. I mean, just like all of us, I always had an answer. I always had a lot to say when I was using. I mean, I don't think I was a flash person, but I always had a lot to say. I had a view on everything, and I could... you know, probably like all of us here, I could solve all the world's problems sitting there with all my cronies freebasing and whacking up and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And then when I got into treatment, and then they people started saying to me, you're fronty, you know, you think you're a, you know, cockney wide boy, and all. I was saying, what the fuck, you know, and I was getting all angry and all that kind of stuff. You mugs, and what do you know, and I've spilt more on the floor than you fucking, you know, and all that, oh, you know, all that kind of stuff. and they suffered me, you know, the treatment centre did, and but miraculously I stayed, and that's the beginning of my recovery. And the most important part is I'm married at the time, a beautiful, beautiful wife, Lynn, who I'd left, but had always been there in the wings, and she was just devastated by, you know, we was happily married for a long time, and there I was, and then so I was encouraged to build this relationship back to see if there was anything left in the relationship. And so we was encouraged, she would come down for family counselling and things like that, and I didn't like that at all, you know, I found it very difficult, and however, time passed, and then it was time for me to come back to London and to move back home with Lynn and get on with our lives and my recovery and all that kind of stuff, and I mean, I'm sure Roz has heard this a few times from me, but it's at the core of me today, and everything to do with my, you know, my inner world and the damage that may have been done to me. And I'm not blaming my parents. I was not abused in an overt way. I have no traumas, but clearly certain needs weren't met in me. Not because they didn't love me, because they didn't know how. Maybe, you know, and. I was 42 then when I came out of treatment, and in my previous life, especially through the 60s, and my first sexual encounter was with these older guys and the older girls who got me at it, and my first sexual encounter, I was watched by my peers, and whilst under the influence of alcohol. That was my first sexual encounter. And then through my early growing up days, using, and then it dawned on me when I was in treatment, it came up with the counselling and all that kind of stuff. And there I was coming home, I was 42 years old, and there was not a lot that I haven't done, you know, promiscuity, you know, all the things, you know, done the fucking lot, you know, and apart from animals and children, and... And I was 42 years old and realised that I'd never, ever had a sexual or an intimate relationship straight. And that was the nearest that I came to using. And, you know, and my wife, who had known me, we'd been together since I was 24. Beautiful woman. We had a perfectly, you know, on the top of it, sexual, you know, relationship in our marriage. But there I was, stone cold. There was this boy, and yet stroke, wise guy who knows it all, with all my sort of macho-ness and all that stuff, having to admit that I'm fucked. I don't know how to do this. I did not know how to make love to my wife. I knew fuck all about intimacy, nothing about it. And it was only the fellowship and people around me. And I have to add, my willingness to challenge all my fears that got me through that. And that's probably the part that I want to get onto now. I got through that. I got through it. And got into the first time a really healthy relationship where we was able to talk about things. I was getting much better at being able to be intimate. Blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And it was great. I felt blessed in the first 5 years of my recovery. And I used to hear all types of terrible things going on in recovery, people finding out illnesses, all kinds of stuff. And I used to think, fuck me. And I used to think, you know, this ain't this difficult for me, this recovery. You know, I'm kind of blessed. Anyway, my wife got cancer out of the blue, and she died. You know, she had a week to live, and she died, and I didn't use. And I always have to emphasise this part. When we sat with the consultant, and the consultant said, she wasn't ill, by the way. She wasn't, you know, showing any outward symptoms of being ill or that she was so near to death. She was working and walking about, but she had a checkup. And then they said, when the consultant said, I'm afraid... you're inoperable, there is nothing we can do. And when that happened, we were sitting there in that room in the Middlesex Hospital. We were just absolutely flabbergasted, obviously. And you know what? This was 7 years ago. Do you know the first thing that went on in my mind? I'm in recovery, I do meetings, I'm a sponsor. I work in the field of I work in the field of addiction and psychotherapy. I'm well put together, ain't I, you know, up here. I've got it all. And the first thought in my head was, fuck me, how am I going to get through? He's just told her she's going to die in a week. How am I going to get through this? How is James going to fucking handle this? I'm an addict. That's how it is for us, you know. And but I didn't use, and you know, I used all my resources and the fellowships and all that fellowship and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, around that part, I want to talk about my recovery through that. Prior to that, I have to tell you this because it's important. Just before all that happened, I had a cancer scare. Well, it was more than a scare. I had to have a biopsy with a cancer on my finger, actually. And that seemed insane to me. I'd heard of cancer of the lung and all that. I smoked a million fags a day, but fucking cancer on the nail bed. And I came near to using, waiting for the biopsy to come back, and it was malignant, and I didn't use. Then Lynn happened. Then my mother died. Then my father died. I've seen horrific things, and the most horrible things have happened to me in recovery. I've seen plenty of shit when I was using, people dying, us leaving bodies, you know, because we want to get out of their house, you know, terrible things. Scumbags I've met. Despicable people, I've been despicable myself, but all the worst things have happened to me in recovery, and I haven't used, you know, I haven't picked up. In fact, I've grown from it, and I always have to use this part. Now, what I want to say is I'm interested in all of us, but I'm also interested in case there's any newcomers here. For me, what I've learned is, and this may be a bit controversial, but it'll sound the way it sounds, what I've learned for me, it's not about how many meetings you go to, just like it's not about Christians who go to church on Sunday. It's about how we live our life when we're not in the meetings, you know. I'm not saying I'm perfect, you know, I'm far from it. I've got all my frailties, I've got all our frailties put together. I'm judgmental, I'm a fucking arsehole, as Anando said, you know, I can be all those things. I'm highly critical, all those things, but I'm also a lovely man as well. I'm very compassionate. You know, it's hard for me to say that, but I have to put that other side to it. So it's not about that for me. I learned that for me, I had to try and work a program in my daily life. It has to exist in my life. Otherwise, just like Christianity or Buddhism or Sufism, it's all a fucking theory unless you live it. And it's no different for us, you know. I used to work, I say this carefully, I used to work for a church organization. I've always despised religion, so obviously it wasn't a prerequisite to be religious to work there. But I experienced lots of religious people, so-called religious people. There was lots of lovely people there, spiritual people, but many of them were ministers and people. I'd meet them at committee meetings and that, but they did not lead a Christian life at all, you know. And that's what I have to think about within, you know, our fellowship, our way of being. Like I say, it doesn't matter how many meetings you go to. It's about how you live your life and how you apply the program. No, I'm not perfect. I try to do, every day I do certain disciplines to enhance my program, you know. Nothing I do, I've looked for other things alongside. I've needed outside help. I do have therapy. There are issues that I cannot deal with in the rooms. I do try to meditate. I do try to bring yoga into my life. The no matter what it is, James has to learn to be still and be, just to be with myself. And every sinew in my body doesn't want me to be with myself, even though I'm 19 years clean, because my head goes, I say this as humbly as I can. I can't remember for a while. I've talked about these incidents, these terrors that have happened in my recovery. Apart from then, in my everyday life for the last 7 or 8 years, I don't think in terms of using. I don't think in terms of my drug of choice. But I'm a raving addict today, as I was 19 years ago. And it comes out in every other kind of behaviour. It could be food, it could be masturbation, it can be, you know, I have a healthy sexual relationship with my girlfriend, but I can still be compulsive and obsessive about masturbation. I can still not wanna, I can compulsively put myself into autism, not pick up the phone, not go to meetings. I can fucking eat 4 packets of chocolate obnobs. I can go out and buy things that I don't want. I can't buy one white t-shirt, I have to buy half a dozen, you know. And they're all signs. What I've learned is that they're signs for me that all is not well. I need to attend myself. I need to attend James, because that's not, something's not kosher here. And I don't beat myself up. You know, sometimes I have a relapse. Sometimes I'm walking around Sainsbury's. I live on my own. And I usually leave out the biscuit aisle. But sometimes I go, fuck it, James, you know, have a packet of hobnobs. And I know that they're going to go in one night, you know, well, not in one night, in 10 minutes. First of all, it's 2 together, then have you tried 3 together, dip it in and they don't, you know. And it's funny, and that is a joke, but it's not a joke, because that means that, you know, things are not well me. I'm not saying that it's the end of the world and it's drastic, but if I don't tend those things by trying to be still with myself, and check me out, you know. I also convinced myself, there are times when I can convince myself that I can actually use. I actually can convince myself I'm this, I'm that, I work in the field, I'm well put together, I do yoga, I'm spiritual, I fucking do service, I fucking, you know, I'm there. I live it and breathe it. And my head can tell me that I can use. Now, the only reason I don't use is because I am not, I've learned enough. I have to be in the question all the time. I've learned enough to know that I am not prepared to take the chance to check it out, because what I've got today is far beyond my belief, you know. And I always have to say this part as well. With my wife dying, that was the most horrendous thing that's happened to me. It was fucking horrendous. But you know what? This is. I don't mean this in a patronising way. You'll either understand this or you won't, according to wherever you are. But this is my experience. It's the most horrific thing that happened to me. But yet, I am so fucking grateful that it happened, with me being clean and sober, and that I can't stay clean and sober, because I was able to be there in my integrity, with dignity, in all my pain, the excruciating pain I've never felt, to see the life go, the lights go out in someone's body and being, and be there with it. It was glorious for me to be able to experience that. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's tremendous sense to me. I've talked a bit about, I struggle every day. Not every day. There's days when I am absolutely, I can work my program and my spiritual self absolutely wonderfully and perfectly when things are going good for me. Soon as the shit hits the fan, something goes wrong, I lose it, you know. I struggle, and that's what I have to tell myself. Don't you get the point, Jimmy boy, as I call myself? It's all very well being fucking spiritual and lovely when things are going well, but the whole point is to have the faith to call on those resources, whatever discipline you have apart from the fellowship and sponsors and meetings. There, now's the time to call on them to help you through this. That's what faith means to me. And I guess what I'll kind of wind up is this, is that what I've learned is I've studied the program, I've torn the arse out of it, I've torn it apart, but I've never not gone to meetings. That's a miracle. I've intellectualized it. I still can tend to. I've got very strong views on things. But what's happened for me is I've learned through daily practices the best of my ability to try to understand that I've got to keep things simple, because the minute that I'm in the chair, James is in the chair. Like I've told you, you know, I'm 19 years down the line and a lot of good things in my life, but my natural inclination is when my girlfriend says to me, "How are you?" Almost as quick as, well, it's almost immeasurable, I want to say, "I'm sweet, I'm fine." If I walk into work, my colleagues go, "How are you, James?" "Yeah." And then I have to stop. Sometimes I have to go, "No, actually, I'm not all right. I feel like shit." And but what I've learned is I've had a turnaround in, you know, we all go through the cycle thing. And what I've done, I've really plugged in over the last couple of years. I've plugged right back into the fellowship. I keep it as simple as I can. And I still wobble and all that kind of stuff, but I really keep it simple. I get to meetings, I share, I do a bit of service where I can. And sometimes my work doesn't enable me to be able to commit to sort of fixed service, but I do what I can. And what I do is I participate in life, which is what I didn't do before. I had all the things and I was there and I did this and I had that and I know them and I know that firm and I know this, but I wasn't participating in life. I do today. And the beauty of it is that my participation and the pain that goes with me with that, and me getting to know myself, the reverse side of that is that the joyful things that happen to me are beyond anything else. You know, it's that sort of opposites again. So by being fully human the best I can, and fully aware of myself the best I can, the greater moments of joy and the things that I get out, the most simple things can give me joy, you know. And so for anybody, newcomers, people who have been around, you know, for me it's turned out to keep it simple, keeping those meetings, but you have to participate in life. You know, it's got to work outside. Just to finish with, I'm going to use an example that happened to me the other day with friends of mine, more people that I know in recovery that I haven't seen for a while. And I went to a couple of meetings that I wouldn't normally get to because I was off work. And a couple of people talked to me afterwards. They went, "Oh, you know what, James? You're such a lucky fucker, aren't you?" And I said, "I half got the zig." I said, "Well, what? What do you mean, lucky? Well, look at you, you know, you're fucking raving nutcase. You know, you're a lunatic, you've done bird, fucking hell, you know, you've been to scumbag land and back. You've got a blinding job, you love your work, you've got a lovely flat, you've got your girlfriend, you're in a terrific relationship, you've really got lucky." I said, well back, I'm sorry. And I have to say it like this. I say to them, "Listen, there's nothing to do with luck there, mate. Nothing to do with luck at all. I've showed up. And this is my controversial part, but I have to do it. Because I had to come back at them. I'm being vulnerable. I said, while you're sitting shining the arse of your trousers for the last fucking 4 years around Chelsea meetings in the daytime, I've been going out and studying, writing essays, pulling my hair out and challenging every fucking sinew in my body to be in place, and things have presented themselves to me because I've been there to be able to embrace them and take them on. That's what recovery is about for me." That's what recovery. So thank you.